jury. Mr. Welby.
May it please the court. Good morning. The question presented in this appeal is how long a man must pay for the wrongs committed as a child. We need to first look to the sentencing guidelines and then ultimately to the reasonableness of the sentence itself. Looking first to the sentencing guidelines, I think it's important to note that the overall structure of the sentencing guidelines and the criminal history provisions in Section 4A1 all focus on the nature of the sentence more so than the conviction itself. Specifically as to convictions committed by juveniles or people under the age of 18, the question turns on the nature of the sentence that was served.
But when you say the nature of the sentence, you aren't really even talking about the fact that it's an adult sentence with various consequences. You're talking about the facility in which the time is served, and those change a lot. I mean, sometimes people are in state facilities, sometimes there are agreements, you know, BOP facilities, sometimes they're mental facilities. I think all juveniles serve their time in a juvenile facility, whether it's an adult sentence or a juvenile sentence, and yet there are other quite significant differences between the two systems.
I don't know personally from Illinois.
I'm speaking for everybody, but I think in Illinois that's the rule.
I don't know the answer to that, if in every state it's like that or not. But what the focus had been at the sentencing in this case was the fact that the defendant was sentenced to 6 years for a robbery committed when he was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. The sentence itself says it's a sentence of 6 years. The defendant served every single day of that in a juvenile facility. He was on juvenile parole, and he continued to complete that sentence under the control of the juvenile authorities.
But the actual papers seem to indicate that that he's charged as an adult. I mean, there are all kinds of rules about when you can be charged as an adult or not.
It is undisputed, Your Honor, that the defendant was charged as an adult. He was 15, but the case was certified. He was charged and pled guilty as an adult. Our point on this appeal is that he served the sentence as a juvenile. The sentence itself says that it's a sentence of 6 years. He did not serve an adult sentence of imprisonment. If you look at Note 7, it makes clear that you use the 15-year category when a person serves an adult sentence of imprisonment. In this case, the defendant did not. He served a juvenile sentence, so it should fall under the more lenient category, which includes the 5-year cap. The facts in this case indicated that the robbery took place in 2000. He was sentenced, rather, in 2000 at the age of 16. He completed that. He finished his time in custody in April of 2002. The first act of relevant conduct that is counted in the guideline calculation occurred in May of 2007. So it's beyond the 5-year gap. That issue was raised, and it was disputed at sentencing whether or not the acts of the conspiracy fell within the 5-year limitations, because the first act of relevant conduct has to be within that time zone. It was the defendant's position that it did not. The government argued to the contrary, and essentially Judge Herndon ruled that he did not have to make that decision because he applied the 15-year time limit rather than the 5. So that is why we are requesting the case be remanded, so that with instructions to apply the 5-year limit and then to make a decision or to allow further evidence on when exactly the defendant's participation in the conspiracy began and what was the first act of his relevant conduct. So there are not a lot of cases that we found to address these points. It's mostly just a strict reading of the guidelines. It would be our position that if you read the guidelines and rely on the notes, that the adult sentence of imprisonment does not apply in this case, and that it should go under the 5 years. The bigger question is the reasonableness of the sentence. This is a case in which the defendant was sentenced to 327 months in prison for selling crack. He's treated as a career offender based on the judge's findings of actions committed while he was 15 years old.
The judge had some pretty harsh things to say about him, actually.
He did, Your Honor. I think it was Mark Twain who said, not all of God's children are beautiful. In fact, most are fairly presentable. Probably in that latter category.
Gregory.
He had problems. But I think in light of some of the Supreme Court decisions that were decided a couple years ago and the cases that are pending now as to the mental state of juveniles and the mindset that people have when they're 15 years old as opposed to when they're 25 years old, as Mr. Gregory is now, are worthy of some consideration. And I don't think the court gave them sufficient weight. I realize that.
Well, reading the PSR, there seems to be some support from what Judge Herndon concluded. But I'd like to know, it's not really clear from that, how much crack he was went into the computation of the sentence. I gather it was something like 15 kilos. Is that correct?
I don't recall it being 15 kilos. I believe
well,
it was.
Well, they converted it to marijuana at one point.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about a few ounces of crack and then a couple more ounces of powder.
Well, that's what's involved in this charge, I think. But, I mean, imputing his sentence,
the relevant
there's
content.
A lot of reference. I was unable to come up with a card number, but it seemed to me they were talking about something like 15 kilos.
It was my recollection that he was charged with, in the PSI, an ounce of crack from May of 07, an ounce of crack sold on the next day, another ounce sold in June, and I thought there was some powder cocaine as well. Now, you're correct that with some converting and calculations, they come up with a higher number, but that, of course, is converting it to powder cocaine, which under these guidelines still are under the 100-to-1 ratios.
Yeah, so powder cocaine is what they're talking about.
I think it's a 15 kilos. Of the actual crack, I think we're talking 3 ounces, which, of course, is over the 10-year mandatory minimum. And it was my argument at sentencing that a sentence of 10 years would have been sufficient but not greater than necessary to achieve the goals of sentencing. And it remains our position today that the sentence is simply unreasonable given the aggravating factors occurred when he was a teenager. And that's our position on appeal.
Well, I don't know exactly how it was computed. I'm looking at this PSR, as I say, there's reference to a lot of the 15 kilos. I don't know what that comes out to, plus a lot of other factors. But there isn't any, I don't think anybody has indicated to us exactly what the sentencing computation was.
Well, I think there was a powder cocaine sale in June also, June 1st. The guidelines, I'm a little cold on this, so forgive me. The guidelines had the offense at a level 32, which I think was...
I saw that, but I don't know exactly what the basis of that was.
Well, I think they were running into the problem when you had different types of drugs that have to ultimately be converted to marijuana, and then you end up with a number that bears no relationship. 10,000 kilograms of marijuana has no correlation to 3 ounces of crack. That's the way the math works. And I know when it came up originally, I think that was consistent. The problem we had was that it fell into the career offender category, which, of course, put it at a level 37, so there wasn't a great deal of discussion on the actual relevant conduct guidelines. The only point that the relevant conduct had at sentencing was when it triggered that 5-year limitation. So if I may save a few moments for rebuttal.
Sure. Yes, Mr. Brew.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Judge, if I may answer your question first, I think I can address it. The relevant conduct came from the aggregate amounts of each purchase from per count of the indictment, the defendant's statements. He made two statements wherein he attributed how much cocaine he had been selling over X amount of time was extrapolated, and then statements from his co-defendants or co-conspirators would have also been taken into account, thereby coming up with 15,000 kilograms, if that may answer the court's question. Counsel is correct.
Well, it does to a degree, except I'm not. Nobody has presented exactly how the computation was made. We 15 kilos, and what's the level of the?
It was a base offense level 32, Your Honor. Basically, because
based on 15 kilos,
well,
or what?
Count one. The government really only had to get to 50 grams of crack. Once we got to 50 grams of crack, it really didn't matter. And there was clearly 50 grams of crack on the table. In other words, 50 grams of crack and actual dope that would have been purchased in this case. Because the defendant was a career offender, the career offender guidelines under 4B kick it up. If I may now just go back and address the appellant's argument, is really quite simple. And that is they want the juvenile conviction to be considered as a juvenile, even though it's an adult conviction. Because they want it doesn't make it so. The fact of the matter is, and the record is clear, and the defendant's certified conviction is attached in the government's brief, it is clear that it's an adult conviction, an adult court, served only in a juvenile facility, and clearly even in government's appendix 1, the certified conviction for the robbery states that the first year was to be served in a juvenile facility, and you're correct, Your Honor, and that he is going to be serving his sentence in a juvenile facility because he was a juvenile.
So I think your opponent's looking at some language and drawing a distinction between the adult nature of the conviction and the, let's say, adult nature of the imprisonment. You know, and there clearly are in Illinois as well as other states juvenile prison facilities and adult jails and prisons.
I think counsel is just reading the plain language of the guidelines wrong. I think if you look at the guidelines, it's really quite clear, and it's just really, I believe, an incorrect reading of it. Under the government's position of 4A1.2D2A, it clearly says add 2 points under 4A1.1B for each adult or juvenile sentence to confinement of at least 60 days if the defendant was released from such confinement within 5 years of the instant offense. That's what he wants to rely upon. The government's relying upon 4A1.2D. And it's just quite simple. The defendant was convicted as an adult, which he was. It's an adult conviction, and received a sentence of imprisonment exceeding 1 year and 1 month, which he did. He got 6 years, which they are not disputing that it was an adult conviction, that it was a sentence of imprisonment exceeding 1 month. You add 3 points. So that clearly makes it countable under the guidelines. You don't even get to the second provision of 4A1.2D2A. But even if you get to that, I still think counsel is reading that wrong. Add 2 points under 4A1.1B for each adult or juvenile sentence. Then you go to the application note. That's where he's getting this language confused. And that states in the application note, offenses committed prior to age 18. Section 4A1.2D covers offenses committed prior to age 18. Attempting to count every juvenile adjudication would have the potential for creating large disparities due to the differential availability of records. Therefore, for offenses committed prior to age 18, only those that resulted in adult sentence of imprisonment. That's what the defendant got. He got an adult sentence of imprisonment.
And that's where your opponent disagrees with you, because he reads that phrase, adult sentence of imprisonment, to mean imprisonment in an adult facility as opposed to imprisonment pursuant to an adult conviction.
That's correct. But the guidelines specifically state what a sentence of imprisonment is under 4A1.2B1, and that refers to the maximum sentence imposed. So even though the language is slightly different, the essence of it isn't. It's an adult conviction. Even though it was served in a juvenile facility, it counts for adult purposes, so it's countable under the guidelines. So I think, but even if you were to read it under that, the defendant was discharged from parole in April of 2002. The indictment charged January of 2007. So that would go back within 5 years. So, and we made this point at sentencing. Even if the court was to consider the defendant's argument as being correct, it still doesn't work for him. It's still within the 5 years. So I think on both fronts, they're wrong. Now, as going to the length of the sentence imposed, I think the court was quite clear, and clearly the court relied heavily upon the history and characteristics of the defendant, and the court clearly stated that, and under 18 U.S.C. 3553A, the court is allowed to do so, and the court was very clear that based upon all those instances of conduct in the PSR that outlined different times that this individual was involved with guns, that this individual was caught with guns, that this individual fired guns, that he was a very violent and dangerous person and needed to be considered a career offender and was, in fact, a career offender and should be sentenced as a career offender at the top of the guideline range. So if the court has no questions, the government would simply
I think I understand the arguments on all these points. I would like to have somebody submit to me just a calculation under the guidelines of what the presumptive sentence would be. It may all be deducible from the PSR, but it's a little hard to follow that in places.
Well, I'm
see
sorry.
See what I'm talking about? I just want to have the calculation of the presumptive sentence under the guidelines.
And crack cocaine, Your Honor?
Well, whatever is appropriate.
Okay.
Well, whatever it is, and since we're under the new timing regime, we'll have those statements in 14 days.
Okay. That won't be a problem. We'll try to do that. Thank you.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, Mr. Welby, you are invited, if you wish, to submit your own statement.
Certainly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you may have another minute.
I'd be happy to be more detailed in writing, but I would note that Mr. Burrow is correct that the PSR used the 15 kilograms of powder cocaine from a statement reflected in paragraph 26. Then they subtracted off the 3 kilos that were actually involved in the buys to come up with the 14.9 kilograms of powder cocaine, assuming that the powder had been converted to crack. And the... the criminal history, in the base offense level, it was made a 34 and then reduced based on the calculations to a 32. So that's. But as I said, I will submit something in greater detail. But 50 kilos would be a 34. To answer the follow-up question, what would the presumptive guideline range have been if we had not counted this conviction? The answer is 120 to 135 months. That is by not applying any points.
Well, that's not taking account of the career aspect, though, right?
That's correct. The guideline range, as it was found for a career offender, was 262 to 327 months. There was, assuming that the career offender determination is correct, which of course we don't agree with, that would be the guideline range that the court was working with at the final sentencing. But for that career offender guidelines, it would have been 120 to 135 months. That's giving him credit for acceptance of responsibility and then taking away the criminal history points for the robbery. I have run out of time, but if there are further questions, I'd be happy to answer.
No, thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not?
I am, Your Honor.
We appreciate very much your assistance to your client and to the court. Thank you very much as well.